Looking for a football show with a bit of a twist?
So I know the likes of Griezmann's big into his fashion.
He wanted a lot. One question he actually asked me was, could he make his studs light up when he runs?
Team 33, the football magazine show for the football purists.
Yeah, the Nike Mercurials from 1998. If you just show that boot to an entire generation of people, and they just get instantly nostalgic and remember everything from that era.
The very best interviews with the cult heroes of the past, and a look at the cultural side of football. Team 33, live at 9 p.m. every Friday on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Now, welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown, the podcast that looks at the stats, XG and performance of Celtic FC. The day that we all knew was coming has arrived. Rangers are the league champions. The 10 in a row is over. And it was all thanks to a performance that we all knew too well against Dundee United in a nil-all draw. Jucco James is with me, as always. We're missing Alan Morrison. He might arrive. He may not arrive. We are awaiting his presence. And if it doesn't turn up, sure, we'll carry on without him anyway. James, how are you?
I'm okay, given the circumstances.
Yeah, it's been a weird week. A week that we all knew was coming. We knew probably knew in November that this was going to happen and at some stage. But at the same time, I was still found myself quite annoyed when it actually did happen because of the manner that it happened, because of that putrid draw against Dundee United in a performance that was exactly like we have had all year round.
I was surprised at my response too. I'd basically come to grips with it intellectually, probably in October, actually, October, November, that time period. I was probably a little more skeptical earlier than a lot of people. But yeah, it was, I had a more visceral emotional response than I thought I would. And I think to your point's a good one. Analytically, once I went back and I kind of looked at the game more closely that way, I think the performance was actually had a lot of things going for it. It was decent in some regards. So I think it felt a lot worse than it was, and that the result was a lot worse than the performance. Mm-hmm. So it was one of those situations. And then you add in the context of it being for the clinch for the losing the league. So I definitely felt it more, I think, as a result. And coming out of the game was more negative on the performance than I think it actually was. So I think that was kind of a common view.
Yeah, we'll get into that performance in just a little minute. But obviously, Rangers are the league champions now. And I did a video, my usual Monday agenda, that came on Tuesday because I was a little bit busy. And I took a lot of stick from the Rangers echelon of the YouTube
Your fan
followers.
Club.
Surprisingly enough, I actually have some regular Rangers fans that actually follow the YouTube channel. It's quite a strange one, but
that's because you're so handsome.
Well, that must be it. It must be it. It's the only logical reason. But essentially, they weren't very happy with me because I didn't give Rangers enough credit.
Right.
Now, this is a massive margin. This is a margin. Hopefully, by the end of the year, might be a little bit smaller. But it is a massive margin for the 10 in a row season. You would have hoped that at least if Celtic went down, they would have went down on their hands and knees, dying for this title. But that's not how it worked out. A part of me does think that Celtic and the shambolic nature of the season is partly to blame for this. But obviously, you do have to give Rangers credit, because they were functional, they were well coached, and at times, especially in Europe, because that's only really when I've seen them, they have been quite good. Now, you did a breakdown on your Twitter account, which you also took a little bit of slack for, but essentially with Rangers, because most Celtic fans don't really watch Rangers all that much, really, because number one, they don't want to, number two, sometimes they're on at the same time. So what are we looking at with this Rangers team? How good actually were they?
So the way I think about it is from an analytical perspective, when you're talking about Celtic versus Rangers, if a significant chunk of both supporter groups are annoyed with you, you're probably pretty close to being right or in the neighborhood of being accurate or, you know, relatively effective in your analysis. So one of the things that I got a lot of heat for coming out of last season was my analysis suggested that Rangers were a lot better than a 13-point margin, and that a lot of the underlying performance data suggested that it was actually quite close league. And the relative contributors to, or factors as to why they dropped points, I think they dropped, it was either 10 or 13 points post-break last season. But their decline in underlying metrics weren't bad. They were marginally lower than they had been pre-break. Morelos scored one goal on 46 shots after the winter break. I mean, that's just ridiculous. That's a absurdly low conversion rate that's unsustainable. They had a clustering of injuries where they had had pretty good injury luck before the winter break. Everyone got hurt then in January and February. Barisic, Davis, Jack, and then Morelos had a ban, and even at the same time, Defoe got hurt. So they had a clustering of, as I call it, negative variants that all hit at once, that even though their underlying performance data was pretty good, it wasn't resilient enough to prevent from being overwhelmed by all of those factors. And the argument I made on, I think it was yesterday, was basically that I think that the 20-point margin at present is a little wide, meaning that if you look at Rangers' performance levels from mid-December till present in the league, they've had some pretty positive variance, meaning that I think they had 8 games where their XG differential was 1 or lower, and they only dropped 4 points over that period. That's just statistically, if you do a, again, for the stats dorks, the probability dorks, if you do a Monte Carlo simulation of that kind of margin and over 8 games to only drop 4 points, that's, you can call it good luck. You can call it just variance. You can call it whatever you want to call it. The Celtic Invincibles of 16-17 had some good luck in there too. They had a game against Partick Thistle where they easily could have dropped points or lost. And they ended up winning it. So, that's why they call it, that's football. Like in a game or two, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, results can vary quite a bit from underlying performance. And that can be in a good way, depending on your perspective, if it's your team, a good way, or in a negative way. So I think the majority of the issue this season was on Celtic's side. I mean, it was the decision making on Celtic side. I mean, there's no way to argue that Rangers haven't played extremely well this year. I just think it's probably not quite as good as probably the consensus. I mean, the non-Celtic supporter consensus, whether it's in the media, the general media, or certainly amongst Rangers supporters.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing: because of Steven Gerrard, the English media are going to jump all over this as well, and they're going to feed into the how good this Rangers side actually are. And look, apart from the underlying performance and the data to back up what's going on in the pitch, the results stand for themselves. Rangers haven't lost a game all year. Their goal difference compared to Celtic have scored 65, Rangers have scored 77. Goals against, Rangers have only conceded 9, Celtic conceded 23 so far. And the draws, Rangers 4 draws to Celtic's 8. So,
the benchmark. And again, to me, this is a compliment to Rangers. So, maybe I'll get some hate from fellow supporters for doing this. But I don't think this season's Celtic version is a good benchmark because the gap is too far. It is too wide. So I've been running a comparison analysis between this season's Rangers and the 16-17 Celtic side, because obviously Rangers have a potential to go undefeated in the league. So, I mean, obviously there's difference in performances and cups, but when we talk about purely the league, they track relatively close except for that period. I mean, if you look at the kind of mid-December up until now, Rogers' side performed a good bit better than this Rangers side when you look at XG differential. Now, is that the only thing that matters? No. And McGregor has had a really good season domestically. They've outperformed at the keeper position relative to, you know, kind of their post shot XG versus the goals that they've conceded. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons, and I think, you know, they're a very good team. I actually, you know, I disagree that they're, you know, functional or how other people have characterized it as you did earlier. I mean, they're a really good team. There's no way that you can do what they've done in Europe and have the record that they've had in qualifying in Europe at the group stages, knockout stages now, two consecutive seasons, and, you know, not to be a really good team.
Yeah, I suppose functional seems like a bad phrase, but I mean that in the nicest possible way. Like, I mean, I would bite your hand off for a functional side.
Yeah, well, right.
I suppose it's so, not strong enough to describe.
I think the way I would characterize Rangers is that they have a handful of really good players, and then they have a lot of good players that are better in a system that suits them. And that's across sports, right? I mean, if you're running a certain strategy or a game plan in American football and it doesn't suit the quarterback, I mean, you don't want Tom Brady running an option RPO offense. That doesn't make any sense. You know, so system suit players, and you could have a system that makes players look better than they would in a different system. And I think to Rangers' credit, they've recruited well within the context of the system that they're running, and they use the players at their disposal in a way that generally puts them in a good position. So they get more out of what they have than I think, particularly this season, than Celtic have, where, you know, as we've talked about for months now, there's been a lot of incoherence as far as putting people out of position and, you know, with the game plan as far as the formation, that type of thing.
Yeah.
The irony of all of this is 6 months ago, I took a lot of criticism for being glowingly flattering of Rangers relative to where I thought they were compared to Celtic, and now, you know, not glowing enough. But I, you know, like I said, I think usually when you're down the middle a little bit, that's probably closer to being the truth.
Yeah, and I really look forward to that comparison. Actually, obviously, there's a few variants between where Celtic are at compared to where that Rangers side were at the Invincible season. But be interesting. We may as well do that as a special in the podcast in a few weeks as well, when we have nothing to talk about because the league's over now. But there.
Where the Scottish Cup end? Do we have the Scottish Cup?
Well, that's it. I'm underestimating the quality of what the Scottish Cup is going to bring us. So let's get into the breakdown then of the game at the weekend, the game that ended up with Rangers being crowned champions, a nil-all draw with Dundee United. You are saying that it was better than what I seen.
Well, there
I'm going to
take
some convincing.
Yeah. So this is actually an excellent game, I think, to analyze for anyone that's looking to get started. You know, it's not that I've, you know, I have 25 years of history of analyzing things, but not nearly as long relative to football data. So, you know, so take my opinion with a grain of salt relative to that. It's not like I have a massive reservoir of wisdom in this regard, but to me, it intuitively makes a lot of sense as a good case study because you have a lot of nuance. So the XG differential, or the XG was about 2.2 to 0.2. So it was a wide margin. I mean, it was Celtic had, I think, 27 shots. Dundee only had 5. So on the surface, you could, and, you know, possession was basically 70-30. So kind of statistically at the surface level, it looked like a controlled performance by Celtic and relatively bad luck, bad variance, or good keeper play from Sechrist, or some mixture of all the above. I thought... And you know, there was a lot more, you know, the formation back to a 4-2-3-1. It looked like Christie was at the right winger, or inverted forward, however you want to call it. You know, there was some good link-up play from him and Kenny, which was nice. A lot of attacking play down the right, which hasn't been all that common. So I think there were a lot of positives, similar to the first game under Kennedy's tenure. The problem I had is that a lot of the negative problems with Brown playing in the midfield and the 4-2-3-1 reemerged, and it wasn't as obvious. Just like the first game against Dundee and Tannadice early in the season, there was a lot of similarity. Actually, that game, I think the XG was like over three to less than half for Dundee. Again, Segrist had a big game, and we scored that late goal with a jetty to pull it out 1-0. But that game had the same characteristics in that there was a lot of transition space where Dundee's midfield had the ball, wide open space, and if they were better, they could have carved us open. Mm. And I basically commented at the time as part of why, you know, I was worried about Celtic, even though they hadn't really dropped much in the way of points at that point. This week was even worse. So the same kind of spaces were opening up, but I'll just use one stat to put this into perspective that I shared in my good, bad, the ugly thread. They had 23 ball entries into our box in the game. Now, by itself, that, you know, what does that mean? How do you put that in context? Well, if you take the six group stage games this season in Europa League and average out those six games, the opponents, meaning Sparta Prague, Lille, and Milan, they averaged 23 entries in those six games. So we basically allowed a team of Dundee's level to have way too much threatening, attacking play, approaching our box in our final third. I think they had over 20 more passes than we've averaged in conceding to opponents in our final third. So, you know, it's kind of been the long running narrative that I've had, which is these problems are manageable when you're playing a team of a certain level. But, you know, you play a team like Sparta Prague, you get your throat ripped out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I saw again. It was kind of like a flashback to earlier in the season. Where the transitions were just, I mean, there was one, somewhere around the 27th minute, I think, where Brown was over near the touchline wide, and he passed it back, and then Bain played a ball out, a terrible ball that got intercepted around midfield, and McGregor and Brown both chased the ball. There was a quick ping pass, boom, boom, bypassed every, I mean, it was like, they were playing pinball around our defensive midfielders. And this is Dundee. I mean, Dundee United. I mean, and it ended up with a poorly executed cross to the back post that probably Welsh was out of position on two. And had it been a better cross with a better player, it would have been a clean header. I mean, you know, so that's the kind of sequence of play where we've been giving them up regularly against poorer level opponents. When we have these issues where they don't do anything with it because they're not good enough. But as soon as we hit a certain tier of opponent, you know, we get ripped apart.
Yeah. And I think that was very evident in the second half, especially in the last, or when you got to about the 50th to the 75th odd minute, the game really died a death in the last 15 minutes. But there was a stage where I was watching this, and the commentator obviously referred to the fact that Dundee were fighting. This was their game to get into the top six. They had to win this game. So this game meant as much to Dundee as it did to Celtic, maybe even more.
Yeah.
And watching that period, I was thinking to myself, you would think that Celtic were the team that were fighting for their place in the top six of the SPFL, because they were being torn to shreds by two passes. That's all it takes to get past the Celtic game. And I think that's the thing that we almost got past it in February when we started playing Sorrow in that position, or playing the diamond, was that two passes no longer took Celtic's team apart. But in this game, it was right back literally to it. One pass to the winger, one pass into the inside, and they were basically 2-on-2 with the defense.
Yeah, and 2-on-2 with Welsh as part of that. And again, you know, he's not Iyer, he's not Julian, and that's no slight of him. It's just he's not there yet. So yeah, it was a disappointing game for me relative to what I had hoped maybe we might see from Kennedy. I got the move back to 4-2-3-1. I don't, you know, I don't think that's necessarily bad inherently. I'll quiz you. How many minutes has, or how many times or games do you think Soro has played in a 4-2-3-1 this season?
4-2-3-1. God, very few, I would say. I would give it maybe 3 games.
Yeah, 0.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So wow. The first game he played, I guess so there was a 4-4-1-1 that we kind of went to with Lille in the second game that we kind of stuck with then in the first league game that he started. Depending on who you are, you might charitably turn that into a 4-2-3-1. But then we went diamond with him, and he only played in the diamond. With his athleticism next to McGregor, I could see that theoretically as not being, and he played a lot of that kind of setup in Israel. He didn't play a lot of central, you know, six. He played with someone else pretty regularly in Israel. So, I'm not opposed to 4-2-3-1. It's just, as I started saying in July, it's, you know, I use pretty severe language. I mean, it's grossly incompetent analytically to play that system with Brown at this stage, given his limitations. Mm. I didn't see anything in this game that refuted that. And the fact that we went through everything that we've gone through this season and we still come back to that and make that same mistake again, to me, was really disappointing relative to Kennedy's decision-making. Now, assuming that that's his decision, the only reason I even raise that is because of the comment from Brown about him basically picking his own, that Lawwell told him he can pick his own future. So, you know, I'm assuming Kennedy's picking the team. I would hope that's the case. Mm. I don't know why he wouldn't be, but who knows at this point. As I've said in recent weeks, not my perfect idea, but if you're going to play Brown, I think he needs that protection and he needs to be central. And, we'll come back to it probably in one of our segments. But, yeah, it was not a good setup for him. I think their touches in the box were way above our season average conceded. So, again, it was one of those situations where a better team easily could have scored. I mean, they could have scored a couple of goals.
Yeah. Oh, easily.
Whereas, you know, a better team, it would have very likely have scored a couple of goals, if not worse.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a key issue here. And the midfield is such an important position, and I've brought it up all year as an example. But again, it's sort of, there's a fresh example now of why this position is so important, and that's Liverpool. Look at the difference that one player, and that is Fabinho, going back into his normal position at centre defensive midfield, does to the entire side. He completely transformed that one thing that Liverpool have been winning on all season was that person in midfield. And he went in. Suddenly, Thiago was having the best game that he's had in a Liverpool shirt. The defense looks strong, solid. Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson are able to bomb forward again. The forwards, Salah and Mane, both scored. One player can make a difference, and in a good way and a bad way. And unfortunately for Celtic, it's been in a bad way pretty much all season. Let's get into the duffer of the week. We'll go with the negative first. We'll finish on a positive note for once. Duffer of the week. I have a feeling I know who this is.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, it's going to be Brown. At this point, well, really, his profile long-term, he needs to offer such value in his tackling, his ball recovery, his interceptions, you know, really his defensive output, and keeping pressure on through counter pressing, that type of thing, because he offers so little in ball progression and in creativity. And this was a game, and if he doesn't offer that, then there's just not much there. It's like Tom Rogic, you know, if he doesn't offer that creativity, he doesn't really do much else. Mm. So in games where he doesn't offer that creativity, a lot of people say, did he even play? Right. So I think this game was an example of that for Brown, in that, you know, I think he won less than 40% of his duels. He had only 3 interceptions in a game where our box was bombarded, right? I've already talked about that. He had 0 clearances. There just wasn't a lot there in production. And, you know, he actually had a couple of decent long passes, which, you know, he's apt to do on occasion. But, you know, his ball progression wasn't there either, which isn't, again, that's not surprising. I wouldn't expect that. But within the context of this specific game, it wasn't there as normal. It was a game. I think his forward pass, I think he completed, or I shouldn't say complete, he was accurate on just 3 of 8 forward passes. And so he completed, he had 3 accurate forward passes and turned the ball over 13 times. Mm. So I think that disparity sums up, you know, kind of the the performance and why he's my duffer of the week.
Yeah, and the impact, I would put Scott Brown in there as well for a further reason of the impact on the rest of the midfield, because I think Cal McGregor was a little bit more tentative getting forward than he has been in the diamond. David Turnbull, obviously, notably taken off by John Kennedy, and he looked pretty pissed off because of that. So just because of the systematic difference it makes to the team, I just don't think a future with Scott Brown starting every single game is one that I want to see for Celtic going forward. Positive notes.
There were actually, you know, I thought a handful of very good performances. I thought that, like I said, and there was parts that were encouraging. The Kenny link up with Christie I mentioned already. El Yunusi got into some dangerous locations. You know, he's generally a good finisher. He led the team in, as Alan would say, total scoring contribution between his expected goals, which I think was close to 1. I mean, his pre-shot, he only had 2 of 7 shots. So he had 7 shots, which is a lot, which I, again, for someone who's a good shooter, that's okay. Like, I don't mind El Yunusi, and 6 of those 7 were from inside the box. So I don't mind him being aggressive and shooting that way from inside the box. So, you know, shooting's not all created equal. 7 Christie shots from 40 yards is not the same as, you know, 7 El Yunusi shots from inside, or 6 of the 7 from inside the box. So I thought he was really good, but I'm going to give it to, I shouldn't say really good. He had significant contributions that you know, were a positive. I think the best performance, after having looked at it a few times over the last few days, was Iyer. And I think Iyer, because our box was being bombarded more than usual, he had 5 clearances. Actually, I haven't written down here. So he had 10 interceptions. He recovered the ball 24 times, 5 clearances, won 21 of 28 duels, and he was accurate on 8 of 10 long passes. So, you know, in a game where we were trying to get the ball forward, you know, his ball progressions, I think he combined for 12 progressive passes and progressive runs. He won all 3 of his dribble attempts. So he even had some XA from the center back position. He had 2 key passes. So that, you know, from a center back, that's pretty good overall output. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he did a really good job of covering. I think that's the one thing. His pace really helps relative to, you know, a Welsh and a Brown playing with some of that ball chasing that takes place.
Yeah, more and more I'm just considering the future without Christopher Iyer at center back as well. And he's standing out to me as just a top class, top quality center back at the minute. And the fact that he's 22 or 23?
I think 22.
Yeah, I think he's 22.
I'm not sure about that, but... Yeah, the crazy thing to me is he's always played, or almost, you know, when he hasn't had his cameos at right back, he's played as a left-sided center back, even though he's almost useless with his left foot.
Yeah,
which is amazing. Like I can't imagine how he'll grow if he gets to play on the right side of a system. The one part of his game that I just find amazing, almost from a, you would think at some point, I mean, because he's played a lot of games now. I don't think he scored a single header from a corner, which given his height is, and somebody can check me on that. If he's done it, it's maybe one. I'm not even sure he scored a header in open play either. I'll have to check, but how bad he is in attacking headers is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
But yeah, because he's good defensively in open play in aerial duels. That's the thing. He's borderline dominant when you know, players are backing into him, you know, with long balls and that kind of thing. So it's just this nuance where he just has not been that great at attacking, corners, that type of thing.
Yeah. I probably get a bit of stick for this, but I genuinely think Liverpool could do worse than get Chris Ryer in their side right now when they can for cheap, because if Nat Phillips, who was going to sign for Celtic anyway, is good enough to start for Liverpool, then the current person who has European experience playing for Celtic and is vastly better than Nat Phillips is surely good enough.
Yeah, and that's I think the issue there, to me, he would almost, and I'm not equating the two players, obviously, from a level perspective, but to me, he would be a number two for Van Dijk.
Yeah, he's the same style of footballer.
Yeah, ball player, dribbling out. You know, I don't think he's anywhere near as good of a passer as Van Dijk, but he's probably maybe a little bit better of a dribbler. I mean, it's probably more of a toss-up in that respect. I think, you know, we're into this quandary now of price. I think it was in September there were reports that Milan tried to get him for a loan with an option to buy at 15 million. That sticks in my head. So I think, given where the market's going or likely to go, you know, I think we might be disappointed with how much we get for him, given how good he is and probably what his upside's going to be. I agree. He's going to be a massive loss if it looks like he departs this summer.
Yeah, I think Celtic are going to get shafted right, left, and center for their transfers this year, or their transfers over the next couple of years, because of the weak bargaining position that they're in at the minute. I want to give a shout out to John Joe Kenny, who I thought was excellent in the first half at least, and quite good in the second half. If he could cross the ball, he'd be an excellent right back, but such is life at Celtic. Do you have a stat of the day?
The seven shots for El Yunusi was, again, I think that's encouraging to me. Having, as I mentioned last week about Edouard being on the ball so much, even though he didn't, you know, necessarily have a lot of production from it. This is in the same vein, meaning that this is why I get encouraged that we're potentially, I mean, it's almost irrelevant right now, but because of the league being over, but we're so close to having a coherent system. If we just put the right players in and see what that looked like. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, again, it's remarkable that we've had so few games this season where we've had a coherent system with coherent selection. And in those games, we performed at a level like we did last season. It's just so infuriating to me that even now, and this is why, again, I was a bit disgruntled after the game relative to Kennedy, because I kind of had this reservoir of hope that, you know, maybe he would address those two issues. Those seven shots, six of them in the box, close to one in total XG, which again, even XG per shot is good. You know, up over right around 0.15 is a good average. And I thought he had the best scoring opportunity. I mean, again, I think it's hard to come out of that game. I think our post shot XG was close to three. Segrist can, and I did this in my pregame performance benchmarking thread on Twitter, is, you know, he's shown that ability to win games, even at his time at Dundee, where, you know, a team can bombard. I think he's faced the most shots in the league. On quality shots. So that back post header from a Christie cross that Elyounoussi misplayed. He did not do a good job on that one. I think that was probably the best chance at us scoring because Segrist was caught towards the front post and he wasn't getting back. Like it was, you know, I don't think he humanly was possible he was going to get to the back post. So again, right position, good cross, good phase of play, just didn't quite come through.
Fair enough. And the result of that game was 0-0. And what is quite kind of funny before I wrap up, you pronounce Edward the same way that the Google team sheet is telling me it is spelt. So I'm looking at the starting lineup and they have spelled it Edward.
Edward. Edward. Did I say Edward?
No, but the accent Edouard? Is like Edward.
Edward. You know what? My daughter, who's soon to be 16, just got inducted into some kind of national language honor society in her high school for Spanish. But I just sat through a 1-hour Zoom call that included French. A bunch of people speaking French. I'm your prototypical dumb American. Mm-hmm. I barely speak one language. My French is worse than my Spanish, which is not even present. So, and I'm married to a Peruvian who's fluent in four languages. So I have no excuse.
Well, there we go. This was the Huddle Breakdown. Alan Morrison couldn't make it. He actually texted to say he wasn't feeling well. So it was just, you're stuck with the Brady Bunch. Is that what you would call us at this point?
The Brady Bunch. Why? Can I be Jan?
Sure. I don't even know what the Brady Bunch
see,
are.
You're too young.
I know
you
that
don't
it's
even remember the football to the broken nose scene.
I know that it's a reference, but I've never seen it. So
there's way too many of them. Yeah, that's we're more the Odd Couple. How's that?
We'll
go back even further to the late 60s.
We'll take that. If you want to label me and James something, you can get us on Twitter at Huddle Breakdown, or you can subscribe to us on YouTube as well. The call within the call is where you can get the podcast if you'd rather watch it rather than listening to it. And you can subscribe to the podcast everywhere you get it as well. We'll be back again next time with another Huddle Breakdown. We might do a little bit more general ones now because the league is over. So we'll figure it out over the next couple of weeks. Thanks for listening. We'll chat to you later.